Hello and welcome to WonderPod, episode 102. According to our resident archaeologist, Audio Master G, that means we've been in business for 2 years now. Not quite as spectacular to me as episode 100, but still worth mentioning. Joining me this week, as always, is John.
Hey, everybody. No rum tonight, just on the water. That's okay. I've given up pop for Lent, if you can believe that. Or I'm supposed to have, anyway.
Well, that's news to me. I didn't know you were Catholic. Also joining us this week, he's back after a week off. It's Glacinator.
Hello, everyone.
If you hear any noises in the background, Glacinator, don't panic. The guy with the loud booms isn't coming to get him. I'm pretty sure he's in a public payphone or a Starbucks with a Starbucks. With a Wi-Fi hotspot. Either way, who cares? He's here, and you'll enjoy it.
Yes, I should be safe this week. So.
From Segway riding, 45-packing campus police? I don't think anybody's safe from that. Glacinator, John and I both know that we haven't played much this week. What have you been playing this week?
All right, well, last Friday, I finally got my hands on Skyward Sword. One of my friends loaned it to me because I was so frustrated with GameStop selling my copy, my reserved copy, that I just went and got it myself. Got one of my friends to give it to me. And so as of now, I just beat the Fire Temple. And I'm not far enough into it to give you how I feel about it, overall opinion yet. But as of now, I mean, it's Zelda. You're going to have fun with it no matter what. You're not going to be complaining about stuff the whole way through. So it is a fun game. I don't want to spoil anything too much, but I like the interactions that Link and Zelda and the King of Hyrule. I don't know whether he's not the King of Hyrule, but it's sort of obvious who he is. The interactions are a lot more personal now that they know each other as opposed to being a king, a princess, and some random swordsman guy from the woods. They all live together, and they interact a lot more, and the dialogue between them is a lot more interesting because of it. Also, it being in the sky is a lot more interesting. It feels a lot like Wind Waker in the fact that you start in one main area, and then you have to spread out into different dungeon/temple areas by descending into the clouds with your bird. And that just gave off really interesting, like, visual gameplay thing of just, like, Link, like, skydiving through the clouds is pretty awesome. So overall, I like it, but I do have some problems with it. I feel that the dungeons and the temples are extremely linear. I mean, as soon as you land in the open area before you get to the temple itself, the field area is basically, okay, that's the entrance to the dungeon, I have to go that way. I mean, there's not really any, do I have to do this, do I have to do that, do I go this way? It's pretty self-explanatory. And the dungeons themselves are also linear as well, but not as much linear. And to me, they sort of feel less like puzzles, which Zelda usually feels like to me is puzzles, and they feel more like obstacle courses. As in, you'll be walking, you enter a room where you're on a tightrope and you have to balance the Wiimote to cross a chasm, and then from there, then you have to jump on a giant rolling ball and then do this and then hit a string with this thing and then go to the next thing. I mean, it feels a lot more, I guess, just go ahead, do it, rather than think about what you have to do, which I'm a little bit disappointed by, but it doesn't bother me that much. The boss battles have been interesting, and the use of the Wiimote is interesting as well. There are a little bit of mess-ups with Wiimote where when you try to thrust your sword, it doesn't necessarily thrust it all the time. I mean, but that's to be expected. Motion control isn't perfected yet, so that doesn't bother me that much either. But overall, I'd say if you like Zelda, there's no reason not to buy this. And that's what I've been playing.
Hasn't that twice that GameStop's boned you on selling your pre-orders?
No, that was still Zelda I was complaining about.
Oh, I thought there was another one they did
last year. Who knows? They might have. It's GameStop.
Amazon, my friend. I'm telling you, Amazon.
Well, you, my friend, have a mailbox. So.
Oh, that is a good fucking point, huh? And if you had it sent home, I'm sure your brothers would leave it untouched until you were able to collect it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, untouched. If we're defining untouched as ravaged, used, possibly scratched, or never to be seen again.
Or E, all the above.
Yeah, most likely. Most likely E, all of the above. John, what have you been playing this week, or what little have you been playing this week? John and I apparently had to be adults this week, which always sucks.
Well, before I get to what I played, I'm gonna just comment on Lace's Zelda experience. I agree with you on a lot of what you're saying there. I mean, I think the bosses in this game are probably some of the best Zelda bosses there have been. In that, it's not necessarily the simple three strikes and they're dead kind of thing. You'll find that as you go along too, there is a lot more. How do I get to this guy or break this guy down and then take it down. So, yeah, the bosses are really good. But you raise a good point about the linearity. Like you say, when you land in the beginning of each area, you get your sword is able to do the dousing thing and point you right toward where you have to go. And, that's your line of sight, and that's where you go. You know, there might be a few things to pick up and move around to get there. But yeah, it is a lot more linear. And I think that's an attempt to make it a little more accessible and more bite-sized rather than, because Zelda can be pretty dense at times. So do you like that they're trying to make it more accessible? Or do you agree, I should say?
Not necessarily. I mean, we all grew up with different Zeldas that were very dense, and we liked them because of that. And so I don't feel that it necessarily has to be dumbed down for this generation's audience because it's Zelda, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think it has to be either. I'm just trying to say that that's what I think Nintendo's approach was here.
Well, I mean, that's obviously what they're doing. The hand-holding is not necessarily bad, but it's obvious that they're trying to hold your hand through this.
Yeah. Yeah, especially there's that one rock guy at the next to the training center where you talk to him and he literally shows you a video, or you have the option to watch a video of how to do everything in the temple, or here's how you find this thing for that guy, and then they'll show you go here and here, and there's your item. You know, it's pretty. There is a lot of hand holding, and I guess it's kind of a sneaky way to include that. What's that thing they called the Nintendo
super guide or something?
The super guide, yeah. It's kind of like a sneaky way to have the super guide in there without calling it that.
Yeah. See, I don't have a problem with the cheat rock, I guess if you want to call it that, as much as I have a problem with the dowsing. Because with the cheat rock, if you don't want to cheat, you don't have to hit it. But with the dowsing, it's in the inventory, it's in the menu, the tutorials force you to do it. So it's kind of like, if I can avoid it, I'll avoid it. But since they made it necessary, I don't necessarily like that.
Yeah, I can't remember her name, but with the spirit that's in your sword, starts beeping at you. Use your dowsing, hurry up, what are you doing? And bing, bing, bing. Yeah. Anyway, I'm glad you're liking it, though.
You know, the funny thing is for me, okay, my background obviously is in RPGs, but not console RPGs. So some of the later Zeldas, I mean, I've played them all at this point, except for Skyward Sword and I think Twilight Princess. Some of those earlier ones, as somebody who's not a diehard Zelda fan and was kind of coming into it, hopping in here and hopping in there, not having played them all in order, some of those were like heavy D&D RPG confusing. So some of this streamlining, to my mind, that I'm hearing from you two in Skyward Sword doesn't surprise me. And as much as I agree with Glacinator, making it optional is always better. I think Nintendo is trying to open it up to even younger gamers than Glace. Because, I mean, how old were you, John, the first Zelda you played? I probably was what? 10?
I played Zelda 2 when it came out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And how old were you, Glace, when you first played Zelda?
My first one were the Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons when I was six. So,
see, and that's the thing. If you look at it through, even as advanced as some of them are, and as much as that terrifies me, like, you know, if you look at it the 6 to 10 year old range, maybe making it a little more, you know, compact and linear is a good thing. Because while, like, Ocarina of Time is the one that stands out to me, that felt like a true RPG or not just, you know, kind of a hack and slash Nintendo RPG, you could get ass backwards and lost and confused. I know I did a couple times the first time I played Ocarina, and there's one other that I'm blanking on, but I'm with Glaze. Any of that kind of stuff, especially from Nintendo, if you want to do the hand-holding, it makes sense to me with Nintendo, but at the same time, you should make it optional, you know. Like Glace is talking about the cheater rock. Don't make it, you know, you have to do it with the dowsing. Is it an actual dowsing rod, or is it your sword?
Your sword is basically the rod.
Ah. Yeah. Okay.
And depending on what item you need or what location you need to get to, the spirit will give it that particular target. So that when you hold it out, you can select what one you want. Like, whether it be, you can help it, you can use it to find hearts, you can use it to find, decide to say what they all do. But
right. Yeah. Well, I think
the hearts is pretty ridiculous, though. I mean, I can understand stuff, but like, oh, I need a heart. Let me just do this little thing. Okay, there's a heart over there. It's like, you would never know that in any other way. I feel that's a little much.
They start you off with six or maybe even eight hearts right away, two rather than three.
Yeah, my roommate walked in when I first started up, like 5 minutes after I started, and he goes, how long have you been playing, man? You have like 7 hearts already. I'm like, I just started. He's like, what? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, they should have definitely left some options, because, I mean, some stuff I can understand. Having a dowsing rod in the god-awful water temple in Ocarina would have been bloody fucking marvelous. You know, but making some of that optional, yeah, that seems a little ridiculous to me. I mean, I still want to play it. I've still got to just force my ass to go get it. And since I do own a Wii,
it's still good. It's still really, really good. It's just as little things as seasoned gamers will say that you're picking. You know, you can't help but notice.
That's always going to be Nintendo's dilemma.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and I mean, but I think you can nip it in the bud immediately with what Glaze said. Just make it fucking optional. Have some kind of thing in there where if you're, you know, gamers like us who've played these before, know how to play Zelda, you know, or want that kind of challenge, you know, because there's in RPGs lately, and I wish they'd do it more because it might get more people into it. You know, like, I think it was Torchlight. I damn near said Porchlight again. God damn it. Torchlight, I think Dungeon Siege 3, and damn it, there's one I was just playing recently that's actually a big gun RPG. And it wasn't Skyrim, and it wasn't KOA. Anyways, you can have trails. Well, Fable did it, too.
Yeah.
You can have trails turned on that doesn't make it so bloody frustrating if you just want to go point A to point B, you know.
Yeah, I can tell you that without those trails in Fable 2, my wife would not have played Fable 2 to completion.
I got to admit, without those trails in Fable 2, there'd have been parts where I'd have went, you know what, fuck this shit. You know? Because even as a veteran of RPGs, there's sometimes where it's just like, you know, this just ain't freaking worth it. New.
I say, she wishes those trails were in every game. Really?
Well, again, as long as it's an option, I'd have no issue with that. You know, because there are points in Skyrim. Skyrim by itself, the gorgeousness of it, the hugeness of it, is so worth anybody, not even somebody that dislikes RPGs, to at least, you know, buy at a reasonable price and look at just for the art's sake. But at the same time, if you put some kind of option in there like that where it could have trails and stuff, or you know, other things, it had a little bit of helpy stuff, but it would have made it an even more open experience for more people. But I think the thing here, and this is the third time I've said it, obviously, so I must believe it, is it making it optional. So, okay, John, now that I've interrupted you long enough, what have you been playing?
Well, I have one other question real quick.
Okay.
Do you think that Zelda and Mario games should have difficulty modes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a no-brainer for me, yes.
Okay.
Nah, I like having it be what it is. I mean, how do you make Zelda more difficult just by making enemies tougher? You know, is that what it is? Or?
Not including the rock, not including the dowsing.
Oh, like just removing all these little helps and hints.
Yeah. Let go of your inner 7-year-old Nintendo fan, John. I mean, I understand that there's a part of me that says, yeah, okay, traditionally, things like Donkey Kong and Zelda and Mario Brothers and all that haven't had a difficulty. It's been based on hearts, or it's been based on lives, or it's been based on this and that. But times change, and maybe that's a way to make it optional. You know, if you want to, you know, because come on, we've all been in message boards, forums, blogs where, oh, well, I play things on hard because I'm super fucking hardcore. Rawr. You know, I mean, you kind of gotta, you sure as hell don't need to cater to those kind of morons because they're liars. For the most part, but at the same time, you know, since your market is so broad these days with something like Zelda or Mario, giving them options, I think is a damn good idea.
Yeah. I misunderstood the question. I didn't realize you meant that hard meant like the option to remove those extras. I just thought you meant the making the game harder in general.
Yeah, I'd be for that too, but I think with Mario, I think Glacinator is saying no Tanuki suit, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, just the option. The fact that it showed up when you died that much just made you feel so bad. Is like the worst video game guilt trip I've ever had.
SSX did that same thing. If you died too many times going down one run or fucked it up too many times, we'll let you pass this, but here was the part that made it disgusting. You will get all the XP for this descent. If it had just let me pass it and like kind of penalized me, I'd have been okay with it. And I only think I did it twice, but it was more the we're also going to give you the XP. Like, you know, they're patting you on the head, telling you it's okay, you're a fucking loser.
here's a lollipop.
Yeah, basically, you were a good boy at the doctor. Here's a lollipop, you loser. Yeah, I mean it's. But I want that there. I want that sense of I'm doing it, but it's cheap. You know what I mean? And I'm fully free to – I'll fully admit when I do it. But it's still, I want that kind of feedback that tells me, you know, you should probably, like, try and earn this legitimately. Okay.
All right. So moving on to what I've been playing. So like we were saying, I haven't played a whole lot that's new. I went back to Ms. Explosion Man for a little bit while I was wasting some time, and I actually passed a level that's discouraged me from the game for the last several months, but I actually got past it. I can't remember the actual level number. It was really early, to tell you the truth, disgustingly early, but I got through it, so I think I might pick at that a bit more. Played some more Pushmo, of course. I did get back to Alan Wake's American Nightmare and played the arcade mode, which was, as I assumed, sort of a Alan Wake's horde mode, where you have to survive through the night, facing waves of taken enemies, and with limited amounts of ammo and places to recharge your health and that kind of thing. I played. There's just the first level, and yeah, I mean it's fun enough, and you know it's one of those kind of leaderboard things where you try to rack up combos without getting hit, or not combos but chains of kills without getting hit, and that, you know, increases your multiplier. So you're trying to, you know, as soon as you finish it, you see your friend's score, so you want to kind of keep going. It didn't really appeal to me too much. It could be a bit of fun, I guess, but it's a single player thing. There's no way to have someone kind of back you up, or, you know, for co-op kind of thing, which I think would kind of be fun as well. But you know, I mean, if you're into that kind of gameplay, go for it. I went back to Rock Band 3 for a couple times this week. I got the new Huey Lewis and the News track pack from a few weeks ago. But more importantly, I've been playing it with my son, who's soon to be 2 years old. And we're not playing it, you know, for reels with points and stuff. You know, we play a couple of different modes. But he, for example, he plays either drums on the freestyle mode, so he's just basically making noise with the drums and the cymbals just going to town. And, you know, he plays a few combinations, and there's the crowd noise cheers him on, so he's yay, and he keeps on going. But lately we've played Weezer's Island in the Sun song in practice mode together, so there's no fails or anything like that, and the song repeats, so there's no having to, you know, pick another song or set up a playlist. It's just kind of go, go, go. And he really likes that song. It's in his playlist that I made for him on my iPod, kind of picking and choosing some of the, you know, the later songs I think he would like. And so we end up trading up playing drums and singing the song. He knows a lot of the words too, in his own kind of way he talks. he can't control his brain. It's one of the things. As a dad, it's pretty sweet to see, you know. Makes me all mushy and all that kind of crap, I guess. But he enjoys it so much, he comes up to me with the microphone and says, hip, hip, like in the song. So, yeah, it's good times until he gets really possessive of both the microphone and the drumsticks. But you know, really, he's only 2 years old, so what can you really expect? So the only new game that I've played is one that just came out this week, Journey for the PSN. It's from the maker of Flower, another PSN game. I don't have a whole lot to comment on it, despite the seemingly overwhelming positive ratings that it's been getting. I've seen lots of 5 out of 5 stars and stuff. And since I heard about the game and how great it was, I tried my best to be spoiler free, so I can't really tell you a whole lot about the overall story, other than that when you start out in the game, you're just this guy in a cloak, you're sitting in a desert, and you wait and you pop your head up and you look around, and all you see is this mountain with a light at the top, and that's the only distinguishing thing in the distance. So that becomes your beacon, and you just start walking in the desert toward it. And as you go along, you encounter various ruins light puzzle elements, getting from A to B to find this icon, not an icon, but like a glowing sphere, or not really a medallion, but it's kind of like a glowing symbol that's just hovering in the air. And when you get it, you get a variation on your ability. So like, the only things you can do are this sort of jump, and once you get one of the symbols, you can sort of fly, you can jump in the air, and you press the button, you glide across, and depending on how charged you're wearing the scarf that has the symbols, and if you get it charged up, you can glide further and further. And I wish I could describe more about the game than that, but that's really all it is. From what I can tell so far, it's just your journey to get to this mountain that's in the distance, and you're kind of learning things along the way about this. It's a very vague storyline right now. It kind of drops you in the middle of it. There's no HUD, there's no explanations of what to do until you get to the moment where it says hold X and then you jump. Like there's really no tutorial or anything like that. So, but one thing that seems to be unanimous is that the game is gorgeous and it really eye catching, and it's got this sort of cell animation style to it. But you know, where it's in high D, it's just, you know, really breathtaking. So, I don't think there's any real music to speak of. There's just you in the desert, and it just looks phenomenal. So I'm looking forward to see how the story unfolds, because I don't know if anybody has played Flower out there, but like, that's just the game where you're the wind blowing leaves and petals of flowers through the land, and there's no story other than you're bringing life to the barren landscape. So it's kind of like that, where there's no motivations other than you got to get from here to there. And yeah, it's kind of enrapturing, actually, it's really cool. I plan to talk about it more as I go, but unfortunately, I really haven't gotten that far. And that's about it.
I've read 3 reviews from people who I know have been less than kind to some of these art games like Flower, like that other one that, you know, you have to win by getting off the path when it makes it seem like you should stay on the path, kind of horse shit. You know, Jonathan Blow, David Gage, Cage, kind of Heavy Rain garbage, and they loved the journey. And now all three of the individuals I'm thinking of are the kind of people that'll call a spade and say, I like this when I didn't like that garbage. So I'm impressed with it, and it makes me want to hunt up a buddy with a PS3 just to see what it's all about. Because, you know, you could take hype and buzz for whatever you want to, but there's certain people I trust and certain people I know that, you know, if it's pretentious horse shit, then you avoid it like the bubonic plague. As you know, basically for me, anything that the dude that made Heavy Rain, David Gage, is making can kiss my ass. Thank God he's staying on with Sony. but the journey, I've seen stills of it and I've read about 5 reviews of it. And even the least positive of those 5 reviews said it was just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's really pretty. Yeah, I haven't read any reviews. I've only seen like the 5, you know, 5s out of 5 or
right.
5-star. You know, that's all I've seen. So I'm trying to approach it pure.
Most of the reviews didn't give away too much because that's kind of the whole point. You know, yeah. Even in the reviews I read, the most in-depth ones, I don't have enough of a concept of what the story is or anything more than really what you explained to, you know, so I didn't feel like if I eventually play it, my experience will be spoiled. But one thing it did remind me of, and Glacianator is probably going to go, what the hell are you talking about when I say this? John, did you ever play any of the Myst games?
I haven't played through the entirety of a Myst game, but I have played bits and pieces of a couple.
That was kind of the, to my mind, and I'm sure if any the wrong person hears this or people hear this, I'll hear about it. Like our audience is big enough. That to me is kind of the grandfather of a lot of these art games. I mean, yes, Myst was a puzzle game, but there was no real traditional enemies. There was no, you know, it was more of, and they were really good looking for the time. Of course, they've spanned a pretty large generation. I think they got up to 5, and that was in the early part of the 2000s, 5 or 6. And it, you know, that's what these kind of remind me of. It's not traditional in the sense of, okay, you got enemies, you got an objective, you got this, you got that. And with the, you know, I'm okay with a game like that. As long as the goal of the game or game's designer is not to go, oh, look how pretty I made shit. Oh, look how clever I am. You know, then I'm kind of okay. And it seems like this game, The Journey, is definitely pretty and clever, but, you know, it wasn't set out to make some kind of pretentious douchebag statement, I think is what I'm kind of getting at. But have you heard of Myst, Glace? Was I making fun of you for no reason?
I have heard of Myst, but I don't really know much at all about it. But to comment on this, though, I have been following Journey ever since it was announced way back, right? I don't know if they announced it after Flower, like right after Flower or not, but it was a while ago. It's been a couple of years now. And I'm probably going to seek out a PS3, one of my friends, and see if I can download it and play it, because this looks extremely fascinating to me, being an artsy-fartsy person. I love this kind of stuff. So I was wondering, have you interacted with another player yet at all, John?
Oh, my God. Is that what that is? Is that what happened to me? Because I went into this one spot where there was another cloaked dude. Was that a person?
Yes, that's an actual other person.
Yeah, because they did seem to be moving around rather randomly. I was following them.
When you play the game, it connects you randomly to another person playing the game, but it doesn't say anything.
Holy shit! Really?
Yes, that was a real person. Yes, it blew your mind.
I wasn't going to say anything because I was afraid to get a little torqued off it with spoilers. That was but now that it's been brought up, that's the other thing I found pretty cool about it. Because it's not an adversarial relationship. I'm sure some douchebag will figure out a way to make it horrible for other people, if, you know, because that's what idiots with internet access do. But
I tell you, I had assumed it was kind of like a computer generated thing that kind of guide you along where you're supposed to go, because he was kind of showing me like, yeah, you go to this, you know, it was this big waving piece of cloth where if you stood next to it and hit your button, it would activate this, you know, this thing. I won't go into too much what it was, but yeah, I thought it was trying to, you know, oh, you're taking too long, here's a little guide to help you, you know, help you along. But no, okay, that's really cool, actually.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the initial articles was that it was going to be more of a social experiment, you know, sort of how people interact with others when they can't talk or anything. And so I think that's interesting that you didn't know that was actually a person.
Wow. Blaze, you just done blown my mind.
Awesome. That's what I'm here for.
I'm not going to go into a long and involved commentary on how trying to do that kind of social experiment on the internet is fucking fruitless. But but it's a cool concept. I think that's the thing you should focus on. Mm-hmm. No matter how somebody may, and I just know it's going to happen because I'm cynical and it's the goddamn internet. You know, no matter how somebody may figure out a way to ruin the experience, it's an awesome concept. Oh, go ahead, John.
I was just going to say that they do something like that in Demon's Souls too, I think, where you come to a certain fight along the way of your path, and it's a person that you're fighting rather than I don't know if it's a boss or not, but there's some duel that happens late in the game where it's, you know, it's a guy. It's not a who's at the same part of the game as you are.
Yeah, to be honest, I wish we'd see more of that, because, you know, we've gotten stuck in this trend of multiplayer or co-op needs to be adversarial or just doing the standard campaign. I mean, even as Fable 2, you know, you had little glowing orbs that showed you where other players were on your friends list. I mean, the downside to that was the Fable 2 co-op sucked balls. The camera sucked, the lag sucked, everything sucked about it. So you didn't want to play co-op, but it's a neat feature. As John and I were joking about a little bit ago, I've had to be an adult this week too, and I've been lazy and just kind of in one of those moods where I didn't feel like playing a hell of a lot of video games. So the only thing I've really played this week is Minecraft. I did a video using too much dynamite as usual. You can check that out on waterpotonline.com. Also, I finally saw some of the new features in 1.2, which always takes me forever because I'm just not that into searching out every last nook and cranny of what they put into the game immediately. I saw an iron golem, for those of you that have played, you know, it's a golem that's designed to defend the NPC villages from zombie sieges. Actually saw an NPC child, multiple NPC children, like 10 of them, and how they are created. It's a rather interesting process, and I'm just going to go ahead and be blunt about it. It looks like that the adult NPCs poop out the NPC children. Sorry, that's what it looks like to me. It's kind of creepy. And to have 10 or 12 of them running around in one village at the same time is an interesting experience. I'm kind of glad I went and did it, because I'm building a treehouse city of sorts in my current single-player map. And so I decided to go do some exploring, actually part of it today. And so to finally see some of the other stuff that they had intended for the 1.2 update, it was really cool. How the young NPCs, or Squidwards, as Glacinators dubbed them, and I actually like that, because that's kind of what they look like, are formed is and how that all works is pretty interesting. Intend to go back to that village and see if I can actually see a zombie siege and how that all works. I was trying to think, make damn sure there was nothing else. I've been playing a little Blocks Cometh and some Gabe Dev Story on my Droid phone, but other than that, really, I've been playing a ton. I'm hoping that I'll feel up to it in the mood this weekend. I think I'm going to go ahead and buy the full version of I'm Alive and play through that some, and I got to still finish up some stuff in SSX. So, that's all we've been playing. Plus, the discussion we had was way more interesting than anything else I could think of to tell you about with Minecraft 1.2. Although, if anybody from Mojang's listening, my list of shit that I think you people need to fix is is shortened massively, but still two, and Glacinator's heard me bitch about one of these number of times. One, I want some way to breathe underwater that doesn't require me to use a broken mod that hasn't been updated since, like, before release. And two, can we please potentially make the boats so that they're a little tougher than they are now? Because right now, if your boat is like a millimeter away from a block and a chicken farts next to it, your boat magically disappears. It's kind of a little lame given how tough the rest of the stuff in the world is. And it really kind of blows when you just gently tap an island and you're stuck in the middle of an ocean with not enough shit to make a boat again. Have you had any problems with that, Glace, or am I the only one that seems to keep getting boned by boats that seem like they're made out of paper?
All the time. On the Minecraft server that I have, we went to go find the first jungle biome, and that was a whole, like, 3,000 blocks away from town. And so what we ended up doing is digging a canal from town, like, through, like, this forest into the ocean. And we made locks, like a lock system so that, like, the boat would go in and then the water would go up and you keep going. And every time we try to get the boat through there, it'll like touch the edge of like a dirt block at like 0.1 miles per hour. It'd be like, dink, and all of a sudden it just explode. Like no more boat all of a sudden. It's ridiculous.
Wait a minute. Is this a new lock system? Because remember when we went to go exploring that one night, hell, the last time I was on the multiplayer server, Matt had made some locks. And, like, nobody's boat made it through it. Like, only one boat made it through it.
It might have been those locks. I'm not sure. But I was also going to say, as well, that he also made a Google Map thing of the server. So you can see, like, the server rendered and zoom in all the way on stuff. So I don't know if you checked the Facebook group at all, but it's pretty
interesting. Oh, no, I do. I saw the picture. I just didn't know I didn't know how well it was rendered. Because I still use... Oh, poop. What's it called? I still use the one that was originally just for Mac. I think you've used it, too.
No, I mean, I put the link in the chat, but, like, you can zoom in all the way on stuff.
Right, but don't you use that map server? All I'm saying is I still use that mapper that... I think it was Mac only at first. I think it's what you were using to make maps early on in the multiplayer server days.
This isn't pixelated. This is, like, actual what it looks like.
Hey, here, let me click on it. We'll do this live on the show. Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
You can zoom all the way in and stuff. Yeah, the town's right in the middle.
Did someone build this?
This is our Minecraft server.
Yeah.
This is your Minecraft server. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yes. I guess I finally need to get off my ass and do a fucking video of this, don't I, Glaze? Wow, how the hell did he render all this?
He's a computer genius. I have no idea.
Huh. I'll be damned.
Yep.
I'll keep that open for later when we're not doing a podcast.
Sorry, distracted everyone. Sorry.
Oh no, that's fine. Yeah, John, you have no idea how many goddamn buildings are in that. I have like my own little town up in the snow country. If it's still there, I don't know. There's probably a half dozen people consistently. I'm not one of those these days. But from start till today, there's probably a half dozen people consistently that play on that server. And you'd be surprised, especially like Glacinator and I did the first Intercontinental Railroad together. You get two or three people together, you'd be surprised the amount of crap you can build. Yeah, maybe it's time I just start doing a video series on the multiplayer server. I think I just have to do it a little chunk at a time. Because the one I tried was just, you know... I try to keep the videos under 10 minutes, even though YouTube will take bigger these days, and it just making a 10-minute video that actually showed anything of that city, just running from spot to spot to spot, kind of turned into a disaster. So, anyways, that's what we've been playing. Let's move on to our discussion topic. I'm bringing up this discussion topic mostly because I don't know. I think gamer culture sometimes is the equivalent of a box of flaming cat carcasses. For those of you that don't know, Mass Effect 3 launched. It had a few issues to start with. Some game saved import issues if you were silly enough to transfer all your shit to the cloud. I wasn't because it took too fucking long. Some facial importing issues, some this and that, which made me go, oh, boy, am I really glad I didn't buy this day one. But now, apparently, and of course, if you believe the blogs and others, it's a large, I'm doing air quotes, folks, large, massive amount of people do not like the ending of Mass Effect 3. Apparently, and this is not a spoiler, this is me being an asshole, apparently they all expected it to be that at the end of Mass Effect 3 that Shepard would settle with a husband or a wife or a male or a female or maybe a Krogan on up Uranus planet 9 into a nice space farming life. I don't quite understand what the fuck they expected, and on top of that, it's a game with a story. You play it, you like it, or you don't. So being kind of that mindset, hearing that there's a petition running around out there to force, again, air quotes, people, BioWare to change the ending, strikes me as extremely stupid. And why I said gamer culture most of the time is like a box of burning stinky cat carcasses. But that is not the question I want to ask you, gentlemen, although I got an idea this topic's going to wander all over the place. John, when you settle down to play a game like Mass Effect 3 that's been building for a few, or you read a series of books, this, that, and the other thing, and it doesn't end the way you thought it should, or you had some kind of preconceived expectations that didn't quite pan out, what is your reaction to it? And what is your and if you want to morph that into what is your reaction to this whole, by God, rah rah, BioWare needs to change the ending, feel free.
If you don't like the endings of your movies or your books, write your own goddamn book and make the ending that you want to make. You know what I mean? Like someone's put their creative juices into a project and made the best thing that they could make, that they thought that they could make. This, yeah, you know, if it hits the right notes for you, great. If it doesn't, well, that's too bad. But they did, you know, like, why? I don't understand why you know this. What's the word I'm looking for? It's like they're owed satisfaction, you know, like to their specification, like, you know, it's someone else's work that they put out there for you to enjoy, and if you do, great. If you don't, well, that's too bad. It's to me, it's ridiculous. Like, I mean, as much as I might bitch and complain about George Lucas changing up the Star Wars movies, you know, I'm not going to write a petition for him to put things out back, like put them back, like, you know.
Claysonator, same thing.
Well, I could honestly care less since I haven't played any of them. So.
No, you're not. Nice try, Junior.
Yeah, nice try.
You ain't getting off that lucky. I meant in general, like, how do you react to, you know, something of this nature, like a series of books, like say they wrapped up the Legends of Zelda, and it didn't have an ending you preferred.
Tough luck. I mean, that's the ending. I mean, it's already made. I mean, that'd be quite ridiculous if they went ahead and remade it, no matter how much money they put into it. You know.
So are you both, and this is a simple yes or no question. So are you both kind of the opinion that once it's made, once it's out, that's it? I mean, you take it or leave it?
Yeah, pretty well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like if there was something broken, if there's something, you know, on some technical level or, you know, honest to God, didn't make sense, you know, maybe. But if it's what the creators intended for it to be and how they wanted it to end or be how they wanted it to be, you know, that's their creative right to make it whatever they wanted to put out.
I've said this for years, and there's one specific person. Well, no, I take that back. There's not one specific person, but there's many people I could think of over the years that, you know, whether you're writing on the internet, making, you know, pictures like Glacinator's multi-armed racquetball god of doom, once you make that public, you got to live and die with it. You know, you got to be the biggest fan of your worst stuff as you are your best stuff. But it just stunned me. I guess I just underestimated how stupid people are, because as the consumer of said product, yeah, it's our job to just take it or leave it. And I just don't, for the life of me, understand why you're wasting time because the ending didn't come out shiny and happy. I swear to God, John, my gut feeling is people were expecting BioWare to somehow make this have a happy ending, and it fucking didn't. Mm-hmm. Which I kind of think from minute one of Mass Effect 2, I saw coming 10 miles out. I don't know about anybody else, you know. But I'm going to ask one more question, and I think I know you guys' answer, but I'm still curious. It's like a car wreck. You just can't look away. Glace, I'll ask you first. Is this within the consumer's right to demand changes like this, like a petition because they did not like the product, or is it not?
Oof, that's a tough one. On one side, I want to say, yes, they have a right, but at the same time, no. Come back to me. I have to think about this.
John, same question.
they have a right. Like, people have a right to complain, or even discuss how they would have done it. That's fine. Like, I watched this video. I mean, back to the Star Wars example. I watched this really good video on YouTube where this guy described how he would have made slight changes to the Phantom Menace to make it in a much more cohesive and a movie that made a lot more sense and more more efficient, better told, much better than how I'm describing what I'm trying to describe here. But it's like, people can do that. That's great. That's discussion. That's what these art and games and movies and books are for discussion. But to bitch and moan to the creator, oh, you were wrong to decide to do that. I don't buy it at all.
I'll tell you one better. There's a guy that recut the Phantom Menace to cut out all of the Jar Jar Binks and other shit he didn't find acceptable, and posted it. I think Lucas finally made him take it down. But I actually find that acceptable. I'm a little bit like, I don't know, I'm a little bit like Glacinator, but I am so sick and tired of all these petitions and other bullshit for less than important causes that I'm kind of like, if you don't think it was done well enough, fucking do it yourself. And my fellow gamers are pushing me to that because we bitch about everything. We fucking think that we're entitled to how we pictured it in our own little sodden heads. And so I've kind of almost been, to my mind, pushed in the corner or just driven, however you'd like to put it, to where if you didn't like how they fucking did it, do it yourself. You know, I mean, I'm like Glacinator. I struggle with it, but because, you know, consumers should have some recourse, I suppose. But at the same time, too, I don't know, this just keeps popping up and popping up and popping up over and over again. You know,
well, this goes to what I was saying about something being broken. Like, if my coffee maker doesn't work, I bring it back to the store and complain. Give me a coffee that works to my satisfaction. You don't do that. I mean, you can bitch and moan about your that's fine. Like, everybody has a right to bitch, and that's what the internet seems to be for. But it's like, to go to the creator of a game or a movie and say, you're wrong. Can you please make it again? Or like, it doesn't work that way. It can't. Like,
well, and that's why I'm thinking I've been driven myself to saying, you arrogant shit, shut up. Because at the same time, I bash on pretentious artsy fartsy bastards who are like, oh, well, you just didn't understand my game because it's just too deep for you. Fuck off. You know, it's kind of cuts both ways. And by the way, Glace, you're not artsy fartsy. You haven't gone that far yet, and I don't think you ever will. You're just artsy. You leave out the fartsy part if you're not a pretentious prick. After John and I discussing it, are you still torn? Do you have, or do you want to leave it like that, Glace?
Uh-oh. Okay, I'm back. I'm gonna leave it that way.
I understand totally. You're not.
I'm still torn.
Yeah, you're not. You're not wrong for being that way by a long shot. Anybody gives you any crap for being undecided about it? Because I thought about it all week when I saw that petition. My instinct was to be pissed because it's like, Jesus Christ, do you know how long it took up to make that game? And a handful of you are pissed off. You know, personally, for me, I'm gonna play it. I'm gonna see what the ending is, and I'm gonna take that ending and attempt to look at it through the eyes of having played the whole series, if that makes any sense. You know, did they stick to how the whole series had been? Because number one was definitely left at a certain point. Number two was definitely left at a certain point where you knew was going to happen in three. And to me and me only, I kind of felt like there was only so many endings they could have without pulling a BioShock. You know, because that's the other thing, gamers, you got to remember, and audience members, you know, games like BioShock, the original BioShock, kind of ended. That's it. That's all. Goodbye. Good night, Gracie. And then they muddled their way into BioShock 2, which turned out to still be a good game, but they kind of had, you know, painted themselves in a corner. And after playing the first two Mass Effects, I kind of felt that there was only so many options they could go with for an ending to the third. And I kind of had this small feeling that there was going to be a giant poop storm about it because people have allowed themselves to get so just so lost in the series or their expectations were set way too high because they have such orgasmic love for the series that I don't think anything was going to satisfy a large portion of them. So, yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense to me. Like Glace posted a cool picture he drew of someone reading, I think it was a Kindle, he said in his comment, and I thought it was a cool picture he drew. Like, you know, I mean, this is his work, this is his art, this is his perspective, you know. But imagine if someone had wrote, you know, or a number of people had wrote on your comment, wrote a comment on your Facebook, I don't like this picture. Could you please redraw it for me because it's not to my satisfaction? Can you imagine if someone did that? Like, that's bullshit.
I mean, to a certain extent, what I was saying earlier is true in that once you make it public, you can't control what people are going to say to it.
People can complain, no problem. But, like, to actually demand that you redo it is just...
Well, I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're going to have that, too. And you're left with two recourses as the creator. Ignore it or tell them to piss off. You know, I mean, and I'm not sure... I'm not sure that you know, telling them to piss off is your best option.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, I'm not even looking at this from the what does the person respond with? That's irrelevant to me. That the actual, you know, the people doing this petition or petitions like it is what doesn't make any sense to me, or the entitlement complex that they have. It's stupid.
Okay, that's been our discussion topic. Let's move on to Audio Master G. He's back with a question. It's about video game movies, I think, this week, or something to that effect. I don't like to peek. I like to be surprised. Kidding. Just kidding. Take it away, Audio Master G.
Hey, hey! Audio Master G here, folks. It's St. Patty's Day Eve, so it's a special shout-out to our resident Patman, Big Papa Pat, who will likely be a sad, sober bastard tomorrow, but his frown will turn upside down when he remembers his newborn son's Irish eyes are smiling. Just put some Dropkick Murphy CD on and pour another one for me. Anyways, let's get back into our video game history lessons before everyone and their grandmother pretends that they are Irish and stagger drunkenly around the streets like zombies without a clue what the holiday is actually about. You see, on March 15th, 2002, the very first Resident Evil movie was released to the masses. And I don't know about you guys, but I thought this was actually a fun adaptation of the video game franchise, and at least one of the best video game adaptations to film ever. So let's hop into our time machine and talk Resident Evil first. What are your thoughts on the movies? Any particular favorites? Do you think there is a better game to film adaptation other than this one? And do you have any thoughts on the sequels? Second up is the games themselves. Do you have a favorite Resident Evil game? A least favorite? And if they were to reboot the movie series, which particular Resident Evil game do you think would cross over into the cinematic world the best? Alright, I'm off to buy myself some green food coloring for, no particular reason. So in the meantime, and in between time, that's it. Wait, what? How the hell did you get here, Diddy? We're Survivor Not Cheat. A rip in the time-space continuum, you say? So it's just you, and you're here to get pissed drunk for the weekend, and then you're gone, you say? You're not Irish, Diddy. You're a monkey. Audio Master G, out.
Brains. Audio Master G, I do love myself some zombies. And Resident Evil, well, I can't say that I played the first one, the first Resident Evil game, but I'd really picked up on the series at Resident Evil 4, like a lot of people did, just because I wasn't a big fan of the tank controls in the first couple, but number four, you know, I got that for GameCube when it came out, and man, it just grabbed me and didn't let me go. And yeah, it's one of those games that I really love. So having played Resident Evil 4, it really got, you know, it made me interested in the movies as well. The movies are pretty good. I mean, they weren't going to win any Oscars or anything, but hey, you know. They're good forms of entertainment, you know. I have no problems with them as popcorn movies. I think I did prefer the first one to all of them, just because I guess it's just new territory and I guess kind of exciting in that way. In terms of a better game to film adaptation, the one that pops to mind is the first Mortal Kombat movie, because my God, when that music hit at the beginning of that movie, and the guy screams "Mortal Kombat," and you're just so jazzed, and whatever came after that in that movie just was just gravy because of that theme song. Really dug it. I think that's the only one that sticks in my mind, or it immediately comes to mind anyway. As for the sequels, to the movies, yeah, they were pretty good too. I haven't seen the 3D one, but I'm sure that's going to be on the list. My wife likes them too, so I think that's definitely going to be in the queue. Hopefully, it'll be on Netflix sometime soon. A least favorite Resident Evil game. I played the original Resident Evil port for DS. That one, it was okay. The implementation of the knife as a swipe on the screen was okay, because as an added, you know, little DS feature, it was okay. But the graphics weren't so hot, and again, you're back into the tank controls. But it was spooky, and it wasn't awful. But I didn't make it all the way through, I don't think. So if rebooting the movie series, which particular Resident Evil game would cross over into the cinematic world? I think 4 is an easy pick. I haven't played 5 yet. It's one of those things in my bucket list that I want to grab on the cheap sometime, and I think it is pretty cheap. But 4 is so over the top, but I did feel it was the most fleshed out experience and felt a little bit more like an action game, some more than horror, so that might translate a bit better into a movie. But yeah, overall, I'm a pretty good fan of the Resident Evil series and the movies. So, you know, if it's got zombies, it's for me. How about you? How about you guys?
Well, to go off of what John said, I think that one of the better game to movie adaptations was actually the Prince of Persia movie that came out 2 years ago. I think it was really well filmed, and I think it got the main storyline across fairly well. But to go off of that, I don't think that necessarily taking a video game from a cinematic point of view is always the best thing to do, and that's why I think, to answer the question, even though it's not necessarily a game to movie adaptation, I'm going to say Sucker Punch, which came out last year. And I know that wasn't a video game, but it felt more like a video game. I know I wrote a review on it on the site last year, but the movie had a lot of video game elements, such as like boss battles and training and like going through different stages, and it felt more like you were watching someone go through the actions of a video game in a cinematic way, rather than just being a story presented in a video game in a cinematic way, if that makes any sense.
Hey there, G. I was never a huge fan of the Resident Evil series. I always liked Silent Hill, and I haven't played many of those, but I did like the first Resident Evil movie. I think that's actually the only one I've watched. I've got a good friend. Well, you've heard about him. He's asked questions. Neighbor Fred, who's a DVD collector. So a lot of times when I'm over at his house, we'll watch movies that I wouldn't maybe necessarily catch on my own or just too damn lazy. The Resident Evil series looks like it's been done pretty well, but I am such the wrong person to ask, because if I'm entertained, then it's not a shitty movie. I got a kick out of the Blood Rain movie, although Uwe Boll's horrible. It was entertaining, and it was watching a vampire chick in leather for 2 hours. I mean, I don't see what the problem is. I have seen the Silent Hill movie, and it was god-freaking-awful. But I'm kind of with John. Having played both Resident Evil 4 and on console or emulator, and then going through it again on my iPhone, you know, I would like to see them do that one if they're going to adapt straight from video games. And you know, in general, G, the video game comic book adaptation thing is such a crapshoot, and it's one of those things where I don't think you're going to win. Because like we were just talking about in our prior segment with the Mass Effect 3 ending debacle, video games and comic books, so many of the fans of each have preconceived ideas of how things should be, that no matter what you do, especially if this comic or movie is really, really popular, you're gonna not be able to please everybody. And if the anti-buzz or the negative buzz gets loud enough, then people on the fence will stay away, or people who don't want their experience with games ruined. You know, game-wise, I can't think of a ton that have been done really well. I like I said, the original Resident Evil was really good. I like Mila Jovovich too, so it doesn't hurt there. And it seems like, from people I've talked to that have seen the other ones, that they've done a fairly good job with it throughout. Sure, it's just an action zombie flick, but that's sometimes that's all you need for entertainment. I think in general, a lot of times, as you know, intelligent, free-thinking nerds, I think too many times we tend to forget about just being entertained, or entertainment for entertainment's sake. And as I said, there's a lot of times where I've been entertained. Sure, it wasn't the greatest movie in the world, but if I'm in the mood for just something, some mindless entertainment, then that's what I'm going to be, you know, that's what I want. It's a good question, though. I'm sorry, G, I just cannot think of anything else that's been done better than Resident Evil. I don't know, Glacier, do the Pokemon movies count?
Oh, I forgot about the Pokemon movie.
I thought you did.
Oh my god!
I was having my show pee break while you were talking, but I thought maybe you'd forgotten the Resident or the Pokemon movies.
Okay, I have a funny story about the second Pokemon movie. It's called Pokemon 2000, and it came out on my birthday that summer. And being obsessed with Pokemon back then as I was, this was like a freaking dream. This was amazing. But I had all my friends go see this movie, and in the newspaper, the review came out the day before in the newspaper. And at the top, it said, the Pokemon movie. And then the review, it just said, bomb. And at the time, I didn't know that bomb meant it's a freaking terrible movie. I thought bomb meant like, it's the bomb. This is the best movie ever. It's going to be great. So like, I grabbed my paper. I ran to my mom. I said, look at this. It got a bomb. It's going to be awesome. And my mom just started laughing at me. She's like, okay, son. All right. It was a great movie too. It was.
That movie, I haven't seen any of the Pokemon movies, so you'll have to forgive me, but aren't they
all... If you don't like Pokemon, they're freaking terrible.
That's what I was just going to say.
Aren't they all things ever made?
Aren't they all meant for kids?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, the company that made it is called Four Kids. Like, Four Kids.
As in the number four?
The number four, and then kids.
Well, my reason for asking that, and I, Nick Course, naturally assumed they were made for kids. That's kind of what Pokemon's been marketed as. Although, all along, I don't understand why they even bother sending reviewers to those. Or send the reviewers kid. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of becoming a theme in this damn show. You know, the audience, just because you're not part of the intended audience doesn't mean... you know, that it's not good or it's not entertaining. So, there you go. I gave Glacinator, see, Audio Master G, I gave Glacinator an
opportunity. Yeah, I'm having a nostalgia trip right now.
To gush about
it. Dude, the marketing for that movie was ridiculous. I mean, when you showed up in the movie, they gave you like these special limited edition Pokemon cards. Like, everyone was like freaking out. Like, oh, I got Mewtwo. I got the shiny Pikachu. And people were flipping out and...
I bet those cards are worth something now if they were fairly limited.
I mean, so many people saw that movie and saw it so many times that I doubt. So.
Yeah, probably true. Probably going to have to wait a few years on that. Well, Audiometer? Well, that's kind of an audio tool. Audio Master G, we appreciate your question as always, bud. And we're looking forward to hearing you from you next week. Let's move on. Got a little bit of time left since I, you know, like to try and keep the show like 90 minutes in case you're curious why I always say we got a little bit of time left. The first one we're going to talk about tonight, there's nothing to really talk about. This is something strictly for the panelists. If you'd like to chime in, Army of 700, you know, we'll give you 1,000 ways to do that at the end of the show. You guys saw the CVG story I sent you about John Romero, yes? You looked at the link, so on and so forth. John, I'm going to start with you. Maybe I'm being a prick here, but it seems to me that two very vague tweets and some scribbling before and after it do not count as news or do not count as something that I would personally post, even though I'm a under the radar hack, even if it is John Romero involved. This is Bruce wrong or right segment. Am I right to be kind of annoyed at this, having to go through this shit every week? You know, just reading through it. Most of the time I don't bring it up to you guys.
Well, I don't think tweets are news. You know, isn't it pretty well the death of journalism that Kate, you know, when they reported that Katy Perry stopped following, her ex-husband, what's his name?
Oh, Russell Brand.
Russell Brand. Like, it made news that she stopped following him on Twitter.
Oh, for fuck's sake, really? My life would have been a lot better if I hadn't known that. Thanks.
I've seen a lot of these spoof photos of that article, and then going through it in red letters was death of journalism. And
well, that's kind of what it... I mean, on one hand, I love bashing on some people because they woman who I try to make damn sure hey, I'm doing pretty good because I've forgotten her name, Leia Alexander. Ooh, you want to talk about somebody trying to justify a journalism degree? Good God, you're writing about gaming. It's kind of the Cliffy B of journalists, you know. You're writing about video games, all right? You're not winning a Pulitzer, shithead. But at the same time, there's kind of a bottom of the barrel for me and two tweets and a write-up. And it's going off my RSS reader. It wasn't exactly a slow news day either. Like, Jesus, I know it's Romero, and I know everybody wants him to make another FPS. I'm in that camp.
As much as I don't think tweets are news, I think it's great that the guy who did Night of the Living Dead wants to do a shooter. That's hilarious.
Bringing up the mistakes for last week. That's brilliant. Glacinator, you feeling the same way we are? This is kind of ridiculous, bottom of the barrel bullshit.
I mean, it's gotten to the point where you get on Twitter one day and you could see Cliffy B and he would say in a tweet, he'd say, "Wow, guys, I just had the strangest dream about mustaches." And then in 10 minutes, all over the internet, it'd be like, "Cliffy B now making the next Mario game. Everyone get excited." Just like stuff gets skewed out of hand so quickly now that, I mean, that's half the reason why I'm not even on Twitter, because a lot of it is just like total utter crap. So.
Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of times I look at my Facebook newsfeed and I want to like start stabbing things randomly, starting with my monitors, laptop, then my desktop monitor. Twitter's the same way, but what I like about Twitter is people are only allowed 140 characters, so the stupidity can only last so long, unlike Facebook. Second, you learn to kind of glaze over at some shit. But, you know, because Cliffy's heroic defense of his bitching about 8 out of 10s for Gears of War 3 was a lot of it was on Twitter. And it's like, after like the first few, it's like, oh, dude, fuck off. I'm just joking territory. You're done. You know, and then I just glazed over the rest of it. But to turn that into news stories, I mean, Jesus. Yeah, I mean, George Romero wants to make a first-person shooter. I'm all for it. If Guillermo del Toro, I'll get it right sooner or later, wants to make a video game, hey, maybe George Romero can. I'm pretty sure George Romero is dead, though.
I think he's alive.
Is he still alive?
He's been making. I mean, unless it was recently, he made a couple of
time to play
zombie movies in the last couple of years.
Time to play a morning drive time radio show, Dead or Not. I'll be fucking damn. I thought he was older than that. He's 72. He was born in 1940 in New York. So yes, he could theoretically be masquerading as John Romero on Twitter and making an FPS game.
If he calls it Game of the Living Dead, well then you know, right?
No, Game of the Living. See, that's the thing. If he really wants to blow people's minds and pull a swerve, you make it live humans versus zombies. See, zombies are the ones that are persecuted. Live humans are trying to eat them.
Oh.
There you go. We've made this into more of a news story. So computerandvideogames.com, if any of your various scribes are listening, two tweets and some innuendo do not fucking count. You're starting to act like Kotaku, and nobody wants to act like that. Okay, the other thing I want to talk about tonight, might be able to get a little Glacinator rage out of this, and if it does, him and I might actually argue. Mojang settled their lawsuit with Bethesda. Basically, they get to make scrolls with the name Scrolls instead of rolled up parchment or rolled up old paper. And in return, Bethesda gets the trademark for Scrolls, which, upon further review and a couple days after this first bit came out, means that Mojang will not be able to make Scrolls 2, Scrolls 3, Vampire Bat from Hell. You know, they'll have to make it rolled up old parchment or whatever. I'm glad to see that this was settled bloodlessly, maybe not as bloodlessly as Notch and the current Mojang would want, and that, you know, Bethesda still was kind of dicks about this, but they got it settled amicably. John, I'm going to ask you first. You see anything wrong here with both of those statements. The fact they settled it amicably, but the fact that Mojang is limited how they can use the word scroll.
I think Bethesda are kind of splitting hairs on whether or not people will get confused with scrolls versus Elder Scrolls. It, you know, I'm happy that nothing particularly nasty happened out of all of it, but the fact that they can't make a sequel with the same name is pretty. That's pretty lame. You know, Scrolls 2 Electric Boogaloo. That's what they should call it.
Actually, I think Rolled Up Old Parchment would be hilarious. I stole that, by the way. I'll give proper credit. I'll give credit where credit's due. Tycho from Penny Arcades, actually, I heard him say it on one of their fourth panel videos. Hilariously enough, I think he's doing it. If I recall correctly, he's doing the writing for Scrolls. So, and I think that's where it came up. Him and Gabe were talking about what the hell are they going to change the name to, and he said something like Rolled Up Old Parchment. Glacinator, as the Minecraft fellow Minecraft head here, what's your thoughts?
Well, I was reading this and it says that it doesn't affect expansion packs onto the game. So who's to say that 2 years down the road, Mojang will decide to release, oh, we're going to release Scrolls expansion pack 1.9.9 with a whole new game engine and everything. You know, it's still the same game. It's just a really big expansion pack. That's all. So,
you know, you're probably not going to like me saying this, because as settling stupid lawsuits go, this is basically a win-win business-wise. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, as much as some of our audience members shrink in fear when I do it, I'm using my business education and knowledge. So, I mean, as stupid as it was for Bethesda to do this in the first place, this is a win-win, essentially. And I don't have a huge issue with them saying, okay, we're going to let you do Scrolls, but the trademark's ours now. Fuck off for the rest of it. Partially because as some commentator or some journalist or blog writer pointed out, Mojang's not exactly known for doing sequels. And second, you know, that's fair enough. You know, Bethesda still kind of comes out the dick in this scenario in general, but I have slightly less respect, Glacinator, if Mojang pulled that. Does Bethesda deserve it? Yes. I don't deny that Bethesda deserves it, but Notch and his company up into this point have proven that their morals and that how they handle ethics in making games and things, while I would not fault them for it, I think I would respect them slightly less if they did what you're talking about. And the thing is Bethesda would probably nail them just to be dicks. and at that point, I'm not sure I would. I'd still call it stupid, but I'm not sure I'd deny Bethesda as much for going, oh, really? You know, and I mean, do you honestly see, having, you know, love Minecraft as much as I do, if not more, do you honestly see Mojang doing anything like that?
I mean, they're not one to really, I guess, make sequels in the first place. So, no, not really. And even if they wanted to, that would be very childish, but it would be hilarious.
No, and yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm all for the funniness of it and it being childish. But to me, it's just kind of like, do you really want to sink to Bethesda's level? Because them Bethesda suing in the first place was pretty childish. You know, so yeah, I don't know. I'm glad that Mojang's going to be able to make Scrolls with the name Scroll, and that Bethesda got what they wanted, and that this and that. But I just found it all kind of funny that and I don't, you know, Bethesda's been catching shit here. One last thing I would like to note. Bethesda's been catching shit here, but their parent company is ZeniMax. And I don't remember all the factoids about the company that is ZeniMax, but I don't think Bethesda, the development studio, was so much to blame here as the suits at ZeniMax. I think we should get that out there just to be a little fair to them. Okay, final question. I got a pretty good idea, again, what your answers will be, but that's kind of my job, is to ask questions. John, are you interested in a card game called Scrolls or Rolled Up Old Pieces of Paper or whatever?
I'm not a big card player. My old buddy Roger, I think, might have a little more interest in something like this. He's big into Magic and that kind of thing. So, yeah, you know, for me, not so much, but someone like him, for sure, I'd say.
Gleisner, how about you?
My love for card games only goes to Pokemon. Other than that, no.
Because I've been impressed with what they've done with Minecraft from Alpha to this point, and the enthusiasm they've maintained throughout, and the fact that I like Jerry Hulkins, Tycho's writing, both in Penny Arcade the Strip and Penny Arcade the two games and some of that other stuff. I might give this a shot. Although, like both of you gentlemen, I'm not a card player unless it's blackjack and I'm sitting in a casino in Reno or Vegas. You know, then you have my attention. But no, Magic the Gathering, stuff of that nature, CCGs, I've never really been into it. So, yeah. Either way, we touched on this when it was the initial lawsuit story, and the news wasn't super great this week. Let's see. Oh, poop on it. I'm going to ask you guys one other thing real quick. Starting in June, Xbox Live is upping the gamer score and the achievements you can get in XBLA games, meaning arcade games, from 200 to 400 in score, and from, what do I got written down here? Oh, crap, I lost it. 20 to 30 in achievements, I think. I closed the window that had that pertinent information. That's not my question to you, though. I'm glad to see Xbox Live doing this. It gives developers more flexibility and freedom to do what they want. My question to you is, although my gamer score is extremely high, or rather high, I tend to not really worry as much about achievements or even make any attempt to achievement hunt when I'm playing arcade games as I might with full games, although I don't do it a ton of full. Glacinator, you first. Are you the same way with arcade games? Does this change really matter to you at all, or do you like collecting achievements in arcade titles?
Well, I haven't really played any arcade titles that much. I'm more of a full game guy, and when I do play full games, I sort of can get obsessive. But the mentality I have when I play an arcade game, from what I can think, is not that of, I have to collect everything. It's more of a, I'm playing an arcade game, you know, just to chill out or mellow out, and I'm not really that obsessed with how well I do, you know, since it's not a full release.
That's my mentality, too. They're kind of something you take a break with in between playing full releases. That's kind of how I look at them.
Yeah, there's no need to get stressed out about getting the highest, like, about collecting 30 birds in 10 seconds and dropping off of this ledge and stabbing someone and then going over here. And I play them just because, you know, it's something to do and I just want to have fun rather than freak out about something.
Exactly. John, how about you? You like us? You got a different take?
I love me them Chivos. Oh, man. I'm very happy that they're up in the limit. I admit, too, that I don't Chivo hunt quite as hard on the arcade games. Most of them tend to be more leaderboard stuff where it's, you know, a little more bite-sized. And though that being said, like in Geometry Wars 2, I did try to get every single one I could, though the last couple were really, really annoying. A couple on there, but they do seem to be a little more attainable. Like if you're a kind of person who likes that, you know, here are the game, all the games you completed to 100% on the achievements. They're a little more attainable because there's fewer of them to get. So, but yeah, I don't hunt too badly unless they're pretty. You know, I don't have to put in too much time to get them all.
Well, that's kind of my baseline attitude for them. I'm less obsessive about them in arcade, as I just said. I more want to have fun. Although, I had enough friends playing Burnout Crash on my friends list that getting different records and getting different achievements while beating their times and their scores was fun. And I think that Glacier said it, and that's the key. my baseline attitude for achievements is I'm not going to do shit that I know is going to frustrate me and piss me off. I know people who will put up with an ungodly amount of annoyance just so they can 100% complete a game, just so they can get certain achievements. And there's just ones, I'll look down the list when I first start playing a game, and there's just ones I know ain't no way in hell.
Well, it's like anyone who I see has collected all the flags in Assassin's Creed 1, I label them as a crazy person right away because they just, there's no other explanation how you could have the patience and the desire to get all those freaking things.
Well, that's kind of why I got so more vocal about it with Skyrim, because I think Skyrim is the first game I played where every last achievement in it, and I guess if I'm going to do it, I better get it done now before they release a damn expansion or DLC and I get screwed sideways, that were attainable. They weren't easy. They weren't going to be super easy, but they were attainable without severe frustration. You know? So it's kind of interesting. So there you go. You guys now know that was the other reason I brought it up. Ran the show a little bit more. They're kind of changing things with the Xbox Live Arcade games. Should be a good thing. I don't see any downside to it at this point, but as we've kind of themed throughout the show, it's the internet. I'm sure somebody will find a downside to it at some point here in the not-too-distant future.
So for clarification, they're not retrofitting old games to have more achievements, though.
No, right? No. I think any game after June, I think it was like 12th or 14th.
Oh, okay.
We'll have them. I don't think they may give somebody the option, but then that kind of leads to DLC or add-ons to games that already exist in arcade, and God, we don't want to give them any fucking ideas. So
yeah, fair enough.
So I think it's going to be any game after June, whatever it was. And I didn't write the date down in the show notes. I just wrote the score and achievement numbers. So that's, let's see. I'll give you guys a few ways to contact us. We know you love to do that, and then we'll get the hell out of here. We have Facebook. It's WonderPod Online. That's right, WonderPod Online. Imagine that. We have a website, wonderpodonline.com. We are on iTunes for the podcast. You're going to have to search for us. The way you can stop that from happening is by giving us a rating. Don't care if it's good, bad, or indifferent. It takes like 10 seconds from what I remember. So, you know, if you could do that, it'd be nice. If you don't like iTunes, we are on archive.org. That's where we host the show because we don't want to crash our poor server to host the site. We have YouTube videos. I'm mostly doing Minecraft videos at this point, as we discussed it earlier in the show. Maybe I need to start doing some of the multiplayer server because it is an awesome thing to behold. Let's see. YouTube videos, website. Yeah, I guess that's about it. I'll give you an email address, too. It's wonderpodonline@gmail.com. wonderpodonline@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter @wonderpodonline. Or you can follow me on Twitter @ORIGIM. Or you can follow John on Twitter.
That's @JohnKehoe, JohnKehoe.
The only way to get in touch with Glacinator is carrier pigeons, so you're out of luck. Unless you own carrier pigeons, which I do not. Until episode 103, I am Bruce McGee. I'm off to see if Phil Harrison wants to work for Nintendo next. See you, people.
Cheers.
Coming to you from an abandoned stairwell. See you next week.
The acoustics are actually really fucking awesome in that thing, though.
That sounds good?
Yeah. Yeah, that's...